New Rock, New Realm, the sequel to New Rock, New Roll, written and read for you by Richard Sparks. Chapter 19. Murrock. Grell was in a foul mood. His feet ached from hour after hour of day after day of walking, through these endless trees, up hill and down dale, across marshlands and grasslands, miles from anywhere. He hadn't seen a settlement in a week. His bones ached from nights of sleeping rough on hard ground under dripping trees. Nothing but the howling of wolves and the hooting of owls and the yipping of foxes and the ruffling of the wind in the branches for company. Sod this for a laugh, he thought every night as he wrapped himself in his cloak and tried to sleep. And he thought it again every morning when he woke up and hauled himself upright and ate some hard tack and dried meat and stale cheese and a withered apple and drank water from the last stream he'd filled his flask in. Then, climbing into his plate armour, which Oldface had said he'd definitely be needing. Thank the gods it was Niblin made, and a lot lighter than it looked. Strong as stone, light as leather, the Niblin smiths had boasted. The light as leather part was nearly true, too, if they'd been talking Helldragon hide. At least he had his comfortable Niblin leather boots on under their plate sabatons. It was easier to march in his armour than to carry it. On him, it fitted snugly. Bundled up on his back, it shifted around and clanked and poked into him, however carefully he tried to settle it into place. Well, it was not too much farther now by his reckoning, maybe only 2 or 3 more days. But, meanwhile, here we are on another grey morning, with thin, cold rain and no one to moan to. Don't you hate it when you have nothing to complain about, Grell? Creaster had once teased him when he was in one of his grumps. He'd fallen straight into our trap with his "too bloody right, Crease." They'd all laughed at him. Yeah, he'd agreed sheepishly. There was no need to be a grouch. Was there something orcish about it, he wondered, being sour? Orcs seemed to be pissed off a lot of the time. Well, when they weren't partying. His kind of people. He didn't actually like it in himself. It was just who he was now. Grumpy bloody orc. I could work a little on my self-improvement on this trek, Grell thought. My geniality, my lovability, my sweetness and light. Meanwhile, just keep going forwards. Forwards, through these leafless trees, on these little slippery paths, past these damp banks of dead ferns and brown bracken, and the occasional pond or stream, and up slopes and down slopes and on and on and on. And now there's this little fuck standing in my way. It was the first living soul Grell had seen in days. Here's me, just trudging along, minding my own business, head down against the rain, and I look up and see him, standing there up ahead, in the middle of this muddy path, arms crossed, eyeing me thoughtfully, waiting for me to stop and talk to him. Grell unslung Fug and held her at the ready. Get the message, shrimp? The shrimp's eyebrows rose. An odd little fellow, he looked to Grell, more like Horm and Narik than Olla, kind of like one, kind of like the other. Nothing resembling a big nasty orc. In a category of his own, then. Long, mud-coloured hair flowed out from under his pointed cap, tied up at the back with a strip of leather. He had to be 40 at the very least, Grell thought. 50 more like, on a closer look. He was in travel-stained clothes, jerkin, leggings, some kind of half-sleeved, raggedy coat over the top of it all. Everything he wore was brown and dark green and splattered with mud. He was leaning on a stained old hand axe. It looked more like a woodman's tool than a proper weapon. He had a knife in his belt, a sword at his hip, and a small round board on his back, beneath a full, sealed quiver, and what looked to Grell like a hunting bow. Unstrung because of the rain. He was small, far smaller than Grell. Also more relaxed than Grell was. He didn't seem to have got the message that Fug in Grell's hands was meant to be sending him. Stand aside or you get some of this. His eyes went from Fug to Grell's face and back again. The little whatever he was said, nodding. Pretty, that. Pretty, Grell grunted. Yeah, and pretty fucking sharp. It's Niblin steel, this is, so back off, you little twat, before I cut you in half with it. Oh, the reply came, someone's in a bad mood. Yeah, someone is, Grell agreed, and someone's on his way, which you're blocking, Grandad. So if I were you, I'd take someone's advice and stand aside. The person stopped his contemplation of Fug and looked up at Grell, not with fear or hostility, but with amusement. He folded his arms, his smile widened, his eyes narrowed, and he shook his head, chuckling. Niblin, he said, really? You seriously use that crap? Grell was shocked. This little old geezer mocking his gear? Best there is, mate, he snarled, and you're welcome to a taste of it. The little old geezer peered at Grell, baffled. Then he chuckled and shook his head. We gonna fight or what? Grell said, towering over him, confused. Nah, mate, we need to talk. What about? Your manners. The fuck's wrong with my manners? They'll get you killed, that's what. If you're going to ponce about like some terrifying bloody warrior, you'd better be able to back it up. I fucking can, Grell barked. You just see if I can't. What? The other frowned at him in disbelief. With Niblin shit? You'd be dead by now if you'd bumped into anyone else round these parts and talked that rudely to them, instead of someone nice and kind and reasonable like me. Grell was, by now, beyond enraged. I'm 5 times your size and armed to the fucking teeth, Grell roared. The frown turned to a smile, and another bemused shake of the head. Yeah, well, that's your problem, mate, isn't it? You're armed with Niblin crap, and dressed in Niblin crap. This stuff is impregnable! The little creature's smile faded. He stared at Grell in amazement. Eventually he said, You're not from around here, are you? Grell shot back, So what? So you don't know shit about nothing, that's so what? Grell had had enough talk. Time to put up or shut up. Look, just shut the fuck up and fight, all right? The person shook his head. I'm not the murdering kind, he said. I'm not going to kill some poor innocent foreign fuckwit just for being a rude ignorant tosser. Granddad, he muttered, as if he almost couldn't believe he'd heard it. Dear, oh dear. That was more than Grell could stand. He charged, bellowing, whirling Fug at lightning speed around himself, like a tornado of razor-sharp steel. The little person watched him come, sighing. Then he moved, fast. His stained old hand axe took Fug's shaft in midair and chopped it in half, while his offhand sword speared through Grell's plate-armoured foot like a skewer through butter, nailing him to the ground. Grell jerked to a halt, from full tilt to immobilised, gasping, holding what remained of Fug's shaft in his grip. What I suggest, the person said, is you stop being a silly boy. Grell managed, by way of reply, Ah! And if you agree that you will do that, the person continued, I will remove my sword from your foot, and perhaps we can calm down and talk about this. How does that sound? From where I'm standing, it would seem you could use a little friendly advice. Ah! Grell whimpered again. Would that be a yes? Grell gasped, nodding. Yes. Jolly good, the little oldish person said. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Murrock of the Woodlake. And you are? Grell of Steinfields. No more Osgaroo's nonsense now that he had papers from Chief Elbrig. Pleased to meet you, Grell of Steinfields, Murrock said. We don't get many strangers around these parts, so I'll be most interested to hear what brings you this way. I'm going to remove my sword from your foot now, all right? Grell said again, and then faintly, Yes, please. With a gentle pull, Murrock slid his scruffy old sword out from Grell's finest Niblin sabaton. Oh, Grell said, tottering. Oof, whoa. Thank you. He stood on his good leg, his recently skewered one dangling in the air, far too damaged for him to stand on. My pleasure, Murrock said, sheathing his sword and settling his hand axe on his belt. Now, I don't know what you're doing in this neck of the woods, but you seem like a nice chap, so perhaps I can help.
Yes.
My clan lives not far from here, an hour's walk, even with a bit of a limp. Our healer is excellent. She'll sort that foot out for you. Come and meet the folks. Have a night under shelter and a nice hot meal, and you'll be on your way in no time, with a spring in your step. Sound good? Grell's thoughts were a whirl. Who was this person? Why should I trust him? Why is he being friendly? I need to get this foot sorted. I've got a delve to clear. Can't fight on one leg. hot food, shelter, information. Gods, how did this happen? He gasped, yes, please, thank you, and I apologise for my attitude earlier. I... Don't worry about it, we all make mistakes. Murrock took Grell's arm and bent it before settling the top of his head under Grell's elbow. Yep, that'll work, he said. Grell didn't have to lean over much for Murrock to support him, taking the weight that Grell couldn't put onto his skewered foot. Think you can manage? Yes, thanks, Grell muttered, still shocked from his wound. I'll need my axe head, he said, seeing Fug's top half lying in the mud. Nah, we'll get you better than that rubbish, mate, Murrock said. Our smith's the best in the land, and you want him to take you seriously, eh? You can't be seen carrying a piece of junk like that. You all right in all that armour? Yes, fine. You sure? You could just dump it here. Smithy will get you kitted out proper. Or he could use the steel, I expect. Melt it down and make hinges or something with it. Nails. You can never have enough nails, eh? Grell's mind was racing between his confusion and the agony in his foot. His Niblin plate no better than nails. She's a part of me, Grell said, as they shuffled past the forlorn double-bladed axe head that he loved so dearly. Oh, well, if you insist. Murrock bent down and picked up Fug's severed head. I do understand. We warriors get sentimental about our kit, eh? He patted his old hand axe and said, if Willie could talk, he'd tell you a tale or two. Grell said, who's Willie? Not who, what, Murrock said. Willie. He paused and lifted his hand axe to where Grell could see it. My little chopper. He grinned, waiting for Grell to get it. Grell chuckled at the lame dick joke. Nice one, he said. Thank you, Grell. Yes, he is. He may not look much my Willie, but he's made a lot of people sorry they laughed at him. Including me, Grell said. Including you. Well, Murrock said as they shuffled on towards the woodlake. Now you know not to do that again, eh? I do indeed. Size isn't everything, right? Murrock teased. Clearly not, Grell agreed. They hobbled on. In great pain though he was, Grell found that it was nice to be talking to someone again, a friendly face with a breezy sense of humour. You all right on that foot of yours? Murrock said. I'll be fine. Tough bugger, I'll say that for you. Orc, right? Right. We've never had any down our way before. Be most interested to meet you, folks will. I'll be interested to meet them, Grell panted as they walked on, or rather, as he limped on and Murrock staggered on, his head jammed under Grell's elbow. Who are you all, by the way? Your people, Grell asked. Eh? Murrock seemed confused by the question. I'm an orc, Grell said, and you're a what? Oh, I see what you mean. Kinfolk, we call ourselves. And other folk are just folk. Wood folk in the forests, little folk in the hills and valleys, big folk in the towns and villages, stone folk in the undergrounds, lost folk in the pits and tombs and such. Like woodskin, Grell suggested. Like and not like, Murrock demurred. Distant cousins, you might say. Like you lot and ogres. Eh? Grell said sharply. We're not fucking ogres. Well, that's not what I said, is it? But somebody was once. According to the tale, anyway. Grell didn't understand. What tale? Of how the world was born, and how all that live on her came into being, and how they lived and died, and some faded away and disappeared, and some changed over the ages. And in the ice time, it is said, which was long, long ago, when things were harsh and bitter cold, and many kinds of folk disappeared forever, there was a tribe of big folk and a tribe of ogres who put aside their differences and banded together. Thanks to pooling their varied skills, they survived the long years of the ice time in the stronghold they built and provisioned. They lived by hunting seals in the ice seas, and walrus and such, and reindeer when the herds migrated, grew what they could in their hothouses above hot springs that bubbled up from deep in the earth, brewed ales of sugar beets and honey, and salted meats and pickled vegetables. Long winter nights in the longhouse they had, with the big fire in its pit below the smoke hole, all that was keeping any of them alive, and got to know each other. Murrock paused, as if to let the picture grow in Grell's imagination. Sang each other's songs, they did, heard each other's stories, and learned each other's natures. saw what they had in common, and what they didn't. It was many generations later that the sun warmed the world again, as he had done before, and by then the children of the two tribes were neither the one thing nor t'other. Orcs they had become. Best of both, some say. Others beg to differ. And that is how your folk began, if the tale tells it true. So, back then, your big folk ancestors were indeed fucking ogres. A new lot came of the couplings in those long, cold nights. Blimey, Grell thought. I'm a product of unnatural selection. Are there any ogres around here? He asked. Nah, they all died out long ago, Murrock said. You lot are all that's left of them. There are some in Jarnland, Grell said. Really? Murrock was surprised. Then where's that, then? Where I come from, across the seas to the north. Long way. We still have ogres there, although I've never met one. Woodskin friend of ours told me a cousin of his had married one. Who's us? Murrock asked. He asked it innocently enough, but Grell was instantly on the alert. He wasn't going to mention the others. Not in this realm, where the four were wanted, dead or alive. Us orcs, he said, and, by way of changing the subject, continued. We have giants, too, up in the western mountains. Me and my lady friend met some. Very hospitable they were, but you can never tell with giants, she warned. One moment all peaceable, next moment they're stomping on you or whacking at you with their stone clubs. Blimey, Murrock said. Glad we don't know none of them hereabouts, Grell. Giants, he shook his head. Who'd have thought it? I thought they was just inventions out of the old wives' tales. How much bigger than you, Grell, are they then? I mean, you're bloody big enough. Me and my orc lady friend sitting on a horse with her perched on my shoulders, Grell said, is about the size of a big one. Gods, Murrock said, impressed. Poor bloody horse. So, what are you doing all this way from home then, Grell? I'm on a mission, Grell replied. What kind of mission? Confidential one, I'm afraid, Murrock, from my chief, Elbrig of the Stonefields. I'll show you my papers when we get to your village. Island, Murrock said. Yes, we'll be needing to see those. Not that we're sticklers for protocol much, with few coming and going through this way, but it's good to know who's legit and who ain't. I expect you'll be hungry by the time we get there, eh? Grell grunted. He was. After nearly 2 hours, rather than just one, of hopping and slithering and putting his wounded foot down by mistake and ouching, Grell was just about out on his feet. Conversation had long since dried up. At least the rain had dried up as well. After a long silence of panting and grunting and lurching, Murrock said at last, "Well, here we are, then." Grell looked up. Through the trees, ahead of him, water, the wood lake. Grell might, if he'd had two good feet, have managed to squeeze one buttock into the canoe that was drawn up among the reeds at the water's edge, but not both. Murrock said. "Tell you what, Grell, you wait here. I'll pop over and come back with the raft, the which we use for supplies and such, or deer when we shoot 'em. No big autumn stag's going to fit into this little thing any more than you are." The island didn't seem far, not more than 300 yards away. "You'll be all right here," Murrock said, climbing into the canoe. "I'll be back in a jiffy." Grell slumped to the ground. "Thanks, mate," he gasped. "For what, giving you that foot injury? No, no, I done that to you. The least I could do is undo it. Won't be long." He wasn't. He was back within 20 minutes with three companions who assisted Grell onto the raft. He didn't register their names, even though they all introduced themselves, and asked how he was doing, and gave each other orders about how to look after him, and carried him onto the raft with a lot of oofing and carefuls. The last thing Grell thought was, "I don't think I can take much more of this." He couldn't. He woke up as the sun was setting. He was lying on a bed, looking up at the underneath of a thatched roof above smoke-blackened rafters. The bed felt wonderful, comfortable, warm and safe. He inched his head around and took in the rest of the room. Wattle and daub walls, a chest, a cupboard, some shelves filled with bottles and flasks. Quiet. Peace. He rolled his head back and shut his eyes again. A hand lifted his wrist and took his pulse. He opened his eyes and found himself looking at a tiny old woman, her eyes shut, her mouth moving as she counted. She placed his hand gently back onto the bed and looked at him. Her eyes were the brightest blue he had ever seen, so light they were almost white. "Well now," she said, "we've seen to your foot, all mending nicely. You'll be as right as rain in the morning. Only a few bones cut through, easy fixings. So now, what you want to do, I suggest, is sit up and see if you can't stand." Grell hauled himself upright as instructed. Gingerly, he lowered his wounded foot to the ground. It was in some sort of casing. "Up you get." He did. To his surprise, he could stand. On both feet. He looked down at the tiny old woman who came up to the level of his hips. "Just the one leg, the one Murrock skewered," she instructed him. Grell wasn't sure about that. He lifted his good leg warily off the ground. The other leg held him up just fine. "Hop," she said. He stared at her. She nodded, smiling. He hopped. His foot felt as if it had never been hurt. "Thank you." "You're welcome, young fellow. Keep that cast on it tonight and tomorrow, and you'll never know our Murrock had touched you. Now, everyone is agog to meet you, and the cooks have been busy as bees. We don't get many excuses for a feast, and if you're not one, I don't know what is. Pop this under your arm," she said, handing him a crutch. "Foot's mended, but it needs time and rest." The healer's sanctuary was part of the longhouse. It led through into another bedchamber, hers presumably, and from there along a short corridor with doors on either side into the main hall. It was full of kinfolk, all sitting at long communal tables, drinking and chatting with their neighbours. A noisy, cheerful room, and smells of cooking coming from the adjacent kitchens. All heads turned to Grell as he limped in, on his crutch, and then Murrock was at his side, and the other rescuers he recognised from the raft before he'd passed out, and they all clapped him on the back and made him welcome, and said how well he was looking. He sat at a bench next to Murrock. A stoneware mug was pressed into his hand. He drank. Oh, gods, was it good! A thick, brown ale, with a foam head, bitter and sharp and sweet and refreshing. He looked around, seeing the faces all looking at him, interested and open. He felt tears come to his eyes. He wiped them away with the back of his hand. His companions all suddenly looked worried. "I'm fine," he said. "I just didn't expect this." "Oh," Murrock said, relieved, "we thought you was upset. Well, we were expecting you. Been looking forward to meeting you, we have. None more so than Smithy here." A bearded face grinned at him from along the bench beyond Murrock. The smith hauled himself to his feet and came over to size Grell up, literally. He was only an inch or so taller than Murrock, but twice as wide. "Pleased to meet you, Grell," he said, as he and his two apprentices measured Grell every which way with lengths of knotted string. "Name's Derwin, but everyone calls me Smithy. Don't mind my apprentices here. We've a deal of work ahead of us tonight. If you could give us tomorrow as well, why, that would be all the time we need, if you're not in a hurry." "No, that would be fine," Grell said, thinking, well, what's one more day? "Good to hear," Smithy beamed. "Can't have you going where you're going in anything but the best. And I've never had the pleasure of kitting an orc before. Come and see me in the morning, all right?" He leaned closer, a broad grin growing inside his bushy beard. "I've got something for you. I think you'll like it." "Oh," Grell said. "Thank you, Smithy." "My pleasure, old son," Smithy said, thumping Grell on the back surprisingly hard. Strong little bugger. "My very great pleasure indeed. See you bright and early, eh? Come on then, lads, we've a busy night ahead of us." Smithy hustled out, followed by his apprentice boys, who were already talking forge talk to each other. "Well, that leaves us time to eat, drink, and be merry, eh?" Murrock said. He refilled Grell's ale and raised his own mug. "Cheers, Grell, and welcome to the Woodlake." "Cheers," Grell replied, "and thank you for having me." They clinked their mugs and drank. New Rock, New Realm, the sequel to New Rock, New Roll, written and read for you by Richard Sparks.